Welcome to Down the Garden Path. I'm your host, Joanne Shaw, landscape designer and plant lover. I enjoy discussing down-to-earth tips and advice to help you seasonally manage your garden and landscape. And I also aim to bring you interesting and relevant topics to educate you all about the landscaping and horticultural industry. My guest today is Eileen Willis from Unilock. Unilock is North America's premier manufacturer of concrete interlocking paving stones and segmental wall products. For 50 years, Unilock has been helping people create beautiful outdoor spaces. Eileen's background is in sales design, and her career at Unilock started over 25 years ago in sales, then moved into various roles in marketing before settling into commercial marketing strategy for 10 years. But in 2023, Eileen took on a newly created position as the Director of Sustainability with a goal to become carbon neutral while building a legacy of beautiful landscapes that enhance our lives, our health, and our environment. Welcome to the show, Eileen.
Thank you for having me.
So how did this come about?
Well, as you mentioned, I was working on the commercial side of the business.
Yes.
So I was working with designers and architects, landscape architects, and so very focused on what their needs were. And it kept bubbling up that they needed more transparency in the products that they were selecting. And they needed additional documentation to aid them in their designs. And that is where health product declarations came in, which we did a few years ago. And then we did environmental product declarations, which short formed EPDs, which really digs into the materials that go into your products and delivers the embodied carbon value for your specific product. So we created those for our various types of paving stones and retaining walls. And as we were doing that, the president said, well, you know, we should really dig into this a little further. Why don't we also look at our carbon footprint? And So we jumped in with all feet into the...
Yes.
And just rolled forward and said, okay, sure, let's do that. So it was layered on top of my role in the commercial side of the business. And at the same time, we were developing a brand new website as well. So it was pretty intense. So It was digging into the various other components that layered on that were kind of driven by the design community.
Oh, that's great. Which is probably driven from the client, like their clients, their commercial clients are probably interested in, you know, how they can improve their buildings and what they're doing. So it's kind of nice that there is that connectivity.
Absolutely. And you know, like LEED, not everybody is designing projects to meet LEED, but they may be, or to get the LEED rating, but they're designing projects to meet that, some of that LEED criteria. Yeah. And again, that dovetails in with the EPDs, helping to achieve more credits on their projects.
For sure. And LEED has been around a long time. And I mean, that I can remember dealing with factories in my previous life, 25 years ago, and LEED was, you know, big and starting to come into, you know, business mindsets, right, of thinking about that. So it's interesting. Now, when I was looking up definitions of sustainability, there were a lot of definitions out there. Did you have one, like, kind of one that you used as a guiding, you know, as you started to talk about it more as a company?
Sustainability is really about understanding what it is that you're using and being most efficient and paring back on what you're using and being mindful of what you're using and thinking about ways in which you can be more efficient and keeping the environment in mind while you're doing that.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. One of the simplest ones I found was meeting our own needs without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. So I thought that was kind of
Absolutely.
like very succinct, but there were like many different iterations of it. But I think it all goes back to the goal of doing things the best we can do for the future, right? For our planet, for our health.
Absolutely.
You know.
And in our profession, we have, you know, we can create great projects, but our great projects do so much more than just be that great thing, right?
Right. And I think we're almost tasked with that responsibility because we are creating outdoor spaces on land and we're disturbing land and creating things in the land or of the land. We have that responsibility, I think, to make sure we're doing it properly. Don't you agree?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it crosses over into not just being great for the environment, but being great for our health and our mental health, our physical health, our communities. It's just so far reaching. It really makes you feel good to create something.
Yeah. And so tell me about some of the first things that you, because I know I learned about this from the great presentation you did to other designers in the fall. And we all kind of were like, oh, yes, this makes so much sense for us to be part of this. And because our clients, you know, we're constantly educating our clients. And I think more and more, you know, some clients at certain generations are a bit more aware of the impact than others. And I think the more we can tell them or explain to them how we're trying to improve things, the better. So what are some of the first things that you decided to tackle?
So we've been doing a lot of things throughout our business already. Some of the really cool things we've been doing are looking at water use, looking at harvesting water, looking at the water that's used in our facility, and then making sure that we can recycle or reuse that water for other purposes. And so we have like a cleaning system and so on that we can use for that. We've installed solar at our facility in Richmond, Ohio. So that's kind of a pilot project to see how that works out. So that solar goes directly into our facility and powers manufacturing of the product on site. We're experimenting with electric forklifts, and then us looking, of course, at electric vehicles in our fleet and adding those into our fleet where appropriate. And you know, that technology is changing every day. An EV is not what an EV was 5 years ago. So it's very, very interesting. We are looking at alternatives to some of the plastic materials that are used on our products, making sure that we can leverage some recycled content or making sure that it could be recyclable. And then, of course, we are looking at chemical technologies that we can use in our facilities to facilitate the curing of our product. And that helps to reduce fuel consumption used in the kiln curing process. What else? Oh, and then of course we do recycle the concrete that we concrete material on our site. Any concrete material that's generated at our site as well. So, you know, there's lots of initiatives that we're layering on. But I think the biggest project that we're undertaking is that carbon footprint project. So we've gathered all the initial data, which, you know, they're interesting pieces of data that we're not collecting already. So it's not like we can just go into our system and say, hey, can we just pull that for that particular year? So we're making the changes in our system to collect the various pieces of data that we need, pulling those all together to assess what our carbon footprint is across all of our business.
And cement production, that's a big part of it, right? Because
of course,
yes, and that was something you explained a lot in that presentation in the fall. So
cement has a very high carbon footprint. specifically because of the way it is produced. And cement is, it's just one portion, one, you know, it's usually, I don't know, 8 to 10, 12% of a concrete mix is cement. But cement is very heat intense. So it's using lots of fuel to heat it up to a very high temperature. When it's heated up to that high temperature, it also emits carbon dioxide and other gases in that process. So it is very carbon intense. So at Unilock, we're super excited to be coming bringing to market a new solution as an alternate to cement. And we're doing that with our EcoTerra technology.
Okay, EcoTerra. Now, I confess to thinking that cement and concrete are the same thing.
That's right. It's not the same thing. And it's often mixed up.
Yeah,
The
they feel like
cement.
cinnamon. Yeah, you know what I mean? Not cinnamon, synonyms. There we go. I see them as synonyms.
Right. No, cement is the binder that goes into concrete. So cement is that material that goes into that mix of aggregates and water, and that creates that binding action. Now, we didn't just start today replacing that cement content. Back in the 1990s, we started using some alternate materials known as supplementary cementitious materials, or SCMs for short. So we started using some alternate materials as binders that were also byproduct materials. So, for instance, slag. So that
Okay.
comes from the steel industry or coal burning, that kind of thing. So we've started using some of those alternate binding materials within our mix. So today, in our regular pavers, all of our pavers, we can replace up to 55% of that cement content in our concrete. And that varies depending on the region in which it's manufactured, the
Right.
local supply availabilities.
And when you say regular pavers, which can you name a couple?
All of our pavers,
Oh,
all of our
all of them.
products, all of
Okay.
them.
Beacon
Yeah.
Hill, all of them.
Beacon Hill, Brussels Block, Umbriano. Yes.
Okay. That's interesting because they all have a different look, right? So you would
Absolutely.
think that you might be one might be more like I think I look at a product like that's tumbled like Brussels, right? It's been around for a long time. Has that process changed over time?
So the one process that was game changing in our industry was, so the original process for making concrete pavers was one batch, so one recipe
Okay.
of aggregates, cement, any additives and color, and it was poured into the mold and then baked essentially, right? So you had the same mix of cement, aggregate, and in that entire mix of your product. In probably around the same time in the 90s, we introduced face mix. So face mix goes in the same mix. So that base mix is put in, which is that mix of large and small aggregates. And face mix is a makeup of finer aggregates and a little more color loading so that you get a more refined surface. And over time, as it wears, you don't see any of the big aggregates, and the color stays on the surface as it should. So it doesn't wear the same way that a traditional paver wears, and the color remains truer for longer.
Excellent. And yeah, we've really seen that, over my career, especially, the new products that are coming in and the way we've been able to really give the clients the look that they're wanting, because nobody wanted their parents' paver necessarily, right? Or the one they grew
That's
up with, they
right.
want kind of new and improved.
That's
And
right. And that face mix layer allowed us to create a lot of different finishes.
yeah.
So we had the flagstone, and then we had the smooth, but then we had some really interesting finishes, like Series 3000, where we have a blend of different minerals and aggregates like quartz and granite, and then we clean it off so they all sparkle. And then we have a finish called Il Campo that has like a brushed type of surface to it. So, and then of course the Umbriano, which is quite unique, kind of resembling granite. But yeah, that face mix technology allowed us to create these new finishes on the surface.
And so successfully that I know clients often, when they choose a brick, let's say Beacon Hill, and then we say, well, you can choose to have it be flagstone and like a bit more of a texture, or it can be smooth. And the first thing out of everybody's mouth is like, oh no, we don't want smooth because it'll be slippery. And it's like, no, it's still a co so then you always have to have that explanation. No, it won't be slippery. It still is a concrete product. It's always educating the homeowners
Absolutely.
in their choices. But it's if you want the cleaner look, the little bit more of the modern look, then you can go smooth, and often, so people get a bit of a choice. So it's really great. But that's how successful that facing is, as they think, oh no, it's going to be slippery.
That's right.
Everybody's thinking about the indoor tile that there somebody might have put on the outside and was a bit of a death trap, right?
That's right.
So that is good. How about permeable? Where do like permeable pavers fall into your mandate of sustainability, and how can we better, as a designer, and better communicate the use of them in home landscapes?
I think the number one thing that anybody can do in any landscape project is use permeable pavers. It's so important in order to get water back into our groundwater. So just to explain what a permeable paver is,
Yes.
a permeable paver is a paver that has a slightly wider joint between the two stones that allows water that falls onto the surface to drain back through those joints and back down into the bedding layer and subsequently into the natural soils below and the
Right.
groundwater table. And permeable paver systems were introduced quite some time ago. For some reason, the date is escaping me, but anyway, they've become essential to help mitigate flooding in flood-prone areas.
Okay.
So we don't have to create infrastructures like sewage systems to carry away these downpours of rain. When we're installing these permeable paving systems, we have an opportunity to create retention or detention ponds in that base, or funnel that water into a capture area to be reused later on site, or just to let it go back into the groundwater. So they're really essential for helping to reduce those flood prone areas, improve water quality, because they've also been proven that as the water percolates through that system, it is cleaning that water.
Oh,
And
good
then it
point.
also decreases the heating of local waterways. So if we have a huge downpour of rain and it hits black asphalt and then runs off that asphalt, it's heating up that water. And that heated water goes into our local waterways and disrupts that natural ecosystem and the local wildlife, the fish and the plants. Aren't used to that, and so that's detrimental as well. So there's so many benefits of a permeable paving system, and they're now highly aesthetic as well because of those technologies that we were talking about. We're able to make them in such a wide variety of styles and finishes.
Now, is that part of, because I know there's regular pavers that are kind of called permeable, but the typical pavers, newer ones, have I call them bumps to my clients. I don't know what the technical term is for them, but I'm always explaining, because that was the other thing that clients will say when they say interlock. They say, oh, I don't want the weed, you know, they're looking at their old interlock or their parents' interlock and the weeds. And I explain how, you know, in the past the joints were very tight and it was a different type of sand and a different type of base, and technology has changed. And now the goal is to have bigger gaps, and so that more of the, you know, permeable, more of the sand and the proper sand, like polymeric sand, can get down there to prevent weeds and to prevent ants, that type of thing. So it, where those bumps, I was saying that it was just because we want more sand, but was that also part of the being making it permeable? And I know there are some sands that are more permeable than other sands as well.
Absolutely. So we call them joint spacers.
Okay,
So,
that sounds better than
little
bumps, but
bumps, little bumps on the side, and they just keep the spacing of the between the pavers consistent.
okay.
So, even the traditional paver that has a smaller joint width, like 3 millimeters, will allow for water to permeate through. By creating a wider joint, we can then allow for a greater concentration of water to flow through those joints and into that base, into that open graded base. And then that gives you a rating of permeability that you can then apply to that particular project. And you base that based on the rainfall in your area. So typical rainfall ratings, as well as looking at 5 year, 20 year, 100 year storm events, as 100 year storm events are becoming more like a yearly event, right? So that's why there's various joint spacing. But as you mentioned, that joint material is super important. In the past, we used to use sand. The sand didn't bind up, it interlocked with other grains of sand. That was our binder, but weeds grew in that. Then came to market like polymeric sands. Not all polymeric sands are permeable. So you want to make sure that if you're using a polymeric sand, and a polymeric sand is a sand that glues together with the other grains of sand with a polymer in the mix. But as I mentioned, they're not all permeable. When permeable pavers first came out, they used an open graded joint material. So think like smaller granules of granite, so a granite chip
Okay.
in there. But now there's other products on the market that are completely permeable. So there's polymeric sands. There are other types of binding materials that can be used in that joint that allow for that permeability, but also remove that weed growth potential within
Okay.
the joint.
Okay. That's good. So that could be one of the first steps. I know me as a designer can really suggest to clients and to work with my contractors to make that switch to more of a permeable sand.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of municipalities are saying that you can't add more impermeable surface to your lot. So I know in Mississauga, which is local, they have a specific rating on your lot that you're allowed to have impermeable. And if you're adding anything additionally on your lot, it has to be impermeable, or a certain percentage has to be permeable.
Yes. Because yeah, water is a big part of it, you know, managing that water. You mentioned open base. Can you just tell our listeners a little bit about, because that's changed too from past, right?
Has.
To a different and that's something I also think that homeowners should be aware of, because they should be asking their, you know, that's how you can play, can compare contractors to contractor, right? Is it's the quality of their work and are they using the best systems? So could you,
Absolutely. Yeah, it certainly has changed. Years ago, I installed a patio and I knew all the specs. I knew exactly how to install it, right? And I used that granular material that you're supposed to use that has a larger stone all the way down to a smaller, almost sand-like sieve of your granular base material. And I compacted it every 3 inches, but it didn't allow the water to flow through it really clearly because it had all those little fines in it. So today's base is an open graded base. And locally, we call it an HPB, high performance bedding. And it doesn't have those small fines in it. So those little bits that look like sand. It has the larger granules, pieces of stone, and they fit together with each other. You relative for many projects, you don't even have to compact it because it remains compacted, but without those fines, it allows the water to completely drain through it. And that's actually become pretty much standard in our market here as the go-to base material.
Yeah, it really has. And I think it, because I don't think it became standard until the guys figured out it, how it worked for them, right? Because if it rained, you know, because if we had a bad rain, they couldn't go back to the site for days because it didn't dry out, right?
That's right.
And so when they realized, you know, the benefit of the water's just, we don't have that issue anymore. There is no more mud. The water's draining away. You can, you know, leave the site in the middle of a rainy day and be back the next day. And it's,
right.
There's no work time lost. So I think that was, the proof was in the pudding. Right,
absolutely.
when they saw, like, okay, this really does make sense for the homeowners. But I don't know that homeowners really think about below, right? It's all about the looks and the process, but I think it's important that we talk to them about that and the way things have changed.
Absolutely.
And
if you think about it, about those surfaces around your home, you always want to make sure that that water is going away from your home. The same goes for a paver installation. Even a wall installation, you want to make sure that the paver or the water goes away from that installation. If the water sits on that in that surface or in that that bedding material near the surface, when we get our freeze thaw cycles, that's what moves those pavers, right? It freezes, that water expands, it pushes the paver out of its sitting place and creates those bumps and undulations and yeah, it doesn't look like it looked when you first installed it.
Yeah, because we can't avoid that. I mean, we, you know, we do get the freeze and thaw, and so much of North America, like you mentioned, the plant in Ohio, I mean, they're still going to get the same thing, their weather system's the same. So there's a, you know, a big chunk of the country that has to, or North America, that has to deal with, you know, different extremes, but still a freeze and thaw. You know, we really
Absolutely.
haven't had much freeze this year yet, but, you know, that freeze and thaw cycle. So I think that's very important.
And it used to be, it would get cold and it would freeze. So if there was water there, it was just a one movement, but the constant freeze, thaw, freeze, thaw, freeze, thaw pushes those materials out of their installed location more frequently, creating more movement. And when it does that, it often can't move back. So that's what happened with my installation. I created a raised patio. I put in that granular material and I compacted it and I had a clear area behind. But every time it moved, it pushed the wall out a little bit.
Yeah.
And I pushed it out a little more. And so then my patio sunk. So today I know much better.
Yes.
So we redid it. We did it all with open granular material. It hasn't budged at all in the last
Yeah.
3 years.
It's such a difference, you know, and I think that's really important for homeowners to know that there has been a process. Interlocking from 20 years ago is not the same interlocking that's being done now.
Absolutely. And there's other materials that we're adding in. So like there's another material that we use called Drive Grid, and it's a special woven material. So you'll often see people hesitate to put pavers on their driveway because it might rut. The car sits there, weighs a lot, right? So you need to dig out deeper to create a better base. If you can put in some of these other materials, like a material called a drive grid, which is exactly what it says, it's a grid material, but it builds in extra stabilization for that driveway. You don't have to have such a deep base anymore. You've got that added stabilization. So you're saving on materials, you're saving on labor, and your driveway is going to stay put as well.
Yeah. And that product also became popular for people who had poor access, right, to a backyard.
Absolutely.
And so the fact that you didn't have to dig out as much really made it more cost effective for contractors to do the work, because they didn't, when they're just taking it out one wheelbarrow at a time, right?
Right.
So that was one big change that I saw in the industry, because I think anybody who has small, I mean, I think of downtown Toronto, lots of narrow spaces, townhomes. And I know the equipment has gotten smaller, right? The machines and the powered wheelbarrows, but not everybody uses those yet. And so I think that revolution of having, that technology to allow for less stone and less material to be moved. And even environmentally, they're saying that, there's a big push on, not push, but awareness that we shouldn't be disturb we should be disturbing the soil the least amount as possible, right?
That's right. And along that same line, where we see failures is next to structures. So next to buildings, next to curbs, next to catch basins, that kind of thing, because the equipment can't get in close enough and compact it well enough. So by using some of these materials, the grid, we have a new product to market that helps with those small spaces that you can use next the house, so that you don't have to worry as much about that compaction. Now, you still have to compact, you still have to do your due diligence, but you can layer in this other material that ensures that it's not going to move, it's not going to settle the wrong way next to the house or next to structure of some kind.
Excellent. Excellent. So are you enjoying this new role?
I am enjoying this new role. You would think after 25 years of being at a company, there's really not that much more to learn, but there's
Yeah.
tons to learn.
Oh, that's
And
good.
it allows me to dig into some really neat data pieces that we can then leverage and look at and analyze and develop solutions. And it's been super interesting, and it's been super interesting to engage the company, to build tools to teach everybody, what is sustainability? What does that really mean? And then how can I be more sustainable if I choose to be? And what things can we leverage going forward? So yeah, it's been a really big learning curve for me, but it's been a lot of fun.
Oh, that's great. And so as far as our role, so what do you see the role of designers? I'm speaking for all designers, but what do you see the role of designers and architects in this process? Like, how can we help move the needle?
We're really fortunate because we're not just, designing an object or a thing that does whatever, does it's inanimate and whatever. We're designing you're designing living, breathing systems. And those systems will enable carbon sequestration. So it's so difficult to talk about carbon emissions and carbon values because we can't see it. It's a thing that's out there. Well, the scientists tell us it's there, so it must be there, right? But we can't see it. We can't say, yeah, we're doing something. But we know that trees, in particular, soak up carbon. We know that soils soak up carbon. We know that all other plant materials soak up carbon, and the research has been done that concrete also soaks up carbon to a certain extent. So all of these materials that we're using in our projects, whether it's a backyard patio, whether it's an urban park, have the opportunity to sequester some of those carbon materials and keep them locked up in that system. So I think is the most important thing to understand. I think the entire market, not just our market, like all market, are going to develop a scaling and a rating of embodied carbon. So it's going to give a value to everything that we purchase and everything that we use. But if we don't look at the value of If we don't look at the system in which that embodied carbon item goes into and better understand that, okay, yes, a paver has an embodied carbon number, But if I put it in a permeable system with the trees and the plants and the right soils, well, I've pretty much gotten rid of that embodied carbon value because that system is soaking up the carbon.
Yeah, so that's all connected. Yes. And which is interesting because the big, as far as the plant side of things, every plant group you go to and every post, is about native plants, native plants, native plants. And that's part of it. But you're right. I mean, to do the full circle, if your backyard is covered, or your front yard's covered in asphalt and you put in a few native plants, that what is right?
Right.
So and I kind of think about Europe and I think about how little asphalt is really there. Like they really use, I mean, I know that a lot of those pavers and, cobble and stuff have been around for lots of years, but it's kind of interesting when you go there and you see how different it is. And, yeah, as far as surfaces and how they see their surfaces.
Absolutely. And that brings up another interesting point. And they're not using as much asphalt. They're using a lot of natural stone and pavers for sure. But that gives you an opportunity to use lighter colored materials as well. And that's really significant because that can help reduce the heat island effect. So for the listeners that don't know what a heat island effect is, it's when the material soaks up the energy from the sun and heats up the surrounding area, it's creating a heat island effect. So, think about a downtown corridor. If you go downtown in the middle of July, it's going to be hotter there than it's going to be in the country next to the cornfield. So, because it's soaking up that energy from the sun, it's radiating it to that surrounding community and heating everything up. And that compounded on top of the buildings and all the energies that they're using, that kind of thing, all compound and heat up our urban centers. So one tool, one of many tools, but one tool is to leverage products and pavers specifically that have a high solar reflectance index. And that allows the sun to put its energy rays down, but it then bounces off the surface of that material and it doesn't heat up that material. And homeowners often think about this in terms of the surround around their pool. Like they don't want it to be hot on their feet, right? So you want a product with a high solar reflectance index. So it's the same kind of thing. When your project has a high solar reflectance index, it's not heating up that surrounding area, it's not heating up those bare feet. And it's better for the environment. It's not heating up the water that hits that surface before it runs off into the local waterways and groundwater.
Excellent. Yeah. And that I think when the clients have an issue and we can show them the solution.
Absolutely.
Right, or the alternatives, and or even just the information that they don't have to worry about that the stone isn't going to heat up. So yeah, that's a great, really good point. Because our job, I see our job as to really informing the clients to make the best decision, and that they can with the products that they're using, with the plants that they're using. For them, it's just an outdoor space, but really, I think it's much more than that. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
Yeah, there's a
definitely.
lot of different benefits that we can help deliver. Obviously you want to understand what it is that the homeowner, their end goal is to have a beautiful space.
Right.
But if they understand that they can also bring along all these additional benefits to the local environment, to their local community and area, I think that, it not only makes them feel good, but now they know that they're doing something that is good for everybody.
Yeah, I think if we know better, we do better, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I definitely think Uniloc as a company is very forward-looking. Uniloc also was the first concrete paver manufacturer to offer a transferable life guarantee for their products, and I think now you're breaking new ground with your new sustainability focus. So I congratulate you. I think it's been great, and I look forward to learning more. So anytime you want to come back and teach me something else, or tell me how we're doing with your carbon footprint, and we can, or any new products that you want me to explain to our listeners, I'd love to have you.
Absolutely. That would be wonderful. Thank you for having
Great.
me today.
Oh, you're welcome. So thank you for joining me down the garden path.